and hello, fair people of the world out there on the internet. This is the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Oh, yeah. Covering day-to-day life, food, lots of alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation.
Lots and lots of alcohol.
Lots. We claim to cover arts, culture, but mostly it's a lot of communications and the internet.
That's right.
Interspersing things of unholy utterances.
That's right. Nicely done. No, I was thinking stolen bike tools, actually.
Hey.
I think it happened, actually, before the last show that we did. But I was at the Mount Scott Community Center in our neighborhood here in Portland, Oregon. And I left my bike locked up outside, had my bike tools in my handy little bike bucket pannier. And somebody came along and filched them. They pulled them right out. It was ridiculous.
That's a very precise thing to steal.
Yeah, well, I think they just kind of reached in and grabbed whatever they could find. I had my bike tools, which was like my full touring tool set, because I carry them everywhere, just, you know, like spoke wrench and everything. I didn't have my chain tool in there. That was nice. So, yeah, but I think they got that. They got my cold weather gloves. And then they ended up getting my warm weather gloves, which I had just picked up on a whim, like for no good reason. I was like, oh, hey, I've got these.
To be dainty.
I'll wear them tonight. Yeah, because it started to get a little bit warmer. And anyways, all those were taken by someone who I assume needed them.
Clearly. The only thing keeping me from becoming a regular bicycle commuter is everything this young man has.
That's right. So
you've made dreams come true, Brock.
I would like to think so. I would like to think that the best possible use is being made of my gloves. But I do sometimes think
simplifying his vagabond life.
So that's crazy. Right. Yeah. I worry that they ended up like in a garbage can somewhere. He's like, well, I don't really need these, which seems like that's maybe how it works when people steal stuff. But anyways, so I went to the store, my local outdoor emporium, and bought a bunch of tools and things. I got a bike pump, actually, that will show you how much pressure you have in your tires, which I'm really excited about. So
one that can strap to your frame, not just one you keep in your closet. So
yeah,
that's pretty good.
So anyhow, that's me. But that is all just kind of irrelevant details, because we also have some things that you need to know, loyal listener. The way to get in touch with us is by email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com or by phone at 503-847-9774. You can call us, leave us a message that way. And you can also find us on iTunes. And I was thinking one thing I wanted to mention was that if you do enjoy the show, if it's something that you listen to here and there, and you enjoy it, it's a good thing. Leave us a review on iTunes. That does make the people at iTunes and Apple Computer take notice of us, which would help us get this program to even more people. So if that's something you want, you can do that for us. There's also a donate button, and you can buy us our beverage of choice, or your beverage of choice, should you care to suggest one. There's a little donate button on our website at thesprocket.podbean.com. Brandon, do you want to read the upcoming shows this time?
Oh yeah,
we'll mix it up for the fair people.
It's crazy. Oh my god. So let's see. March 20th, we've got Josh the Bike Plumber. He's with St. Francis Plumbing. You can Google that and find out more about him. He's pretty cool. We've got on the 27th of this fair month, Michael Parzali.
Sounds good.
Cool.
We're going to have to ask him about that pronunciation.
Yeah. He's with the Grease Bus. Google that. And on the 3rd of April, we have Joe Kermaski, the Metal Cowboy.
That's Yeehaw. I've heard him say that every time he's introduced as the Metal Cowboy. Yeah. It's like his So he will more.
He didn't steal his thunder.
That,
or his yeehaw.
So to speak, steal.
Okay. I think he's making a joke about metal. Anyways. I get it now. I see what you did there.
Thank you, sir.
I see what you did. And then let's see, on the 10th of April, CJ, my friend CJ.
That's a guy you know.
Yeah, that's I know him. He's with Wrench Raiders. He does bike fixing for the marginalized and disenfranchised, otherly franchised.
Yeah, yeah.
folks in PDX.
Those into mobile living.
That's right. Yeah. Dynamic living.
Yeah. Well, speaking of friends of ours, we're going to reintroduce
who our guests.
That's right. We're going to reintroduce a man who is sitting over here looking self-satisfied with his arms folded and a big smile on his face and a stylish beard, Mr. David Hetty. It's been, you were on episode 4, I think.
A New Hope. That's right.
That's right.
I wasn't keeping track, but I think that sounds right.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Many episodes ago.
We did that, and it's now episode 17, so it's been amazing. Some time for both of us. I mean, you and I see each other fairly often, and you, sir, Mr. Hetty, actually did some work on my bike.
Extensive work.
Just a little while ago, and yeah. When I brought it to you, it was just a craven husk of a bicycle, and and it is now it's now fully functional and set for touring, I suppose.
How are the brakes working out?
The brakes, yeah, it's funny. You adjusted the brakes on my bicycle. They had been kind of spongy. They're not built for the bike that I have, right? It's like it's a different style than would have been on there from the factory.
Right.
And I got used to them being kind of squishy and spongy and not altogether. You couldn't cause, as the Oregon state law mandates, a skid when applied. So, yeah.
But the new ones can cause
the
a
new
skid.
Ones can cause a skid. Yeah. The thing is, I've gotten used to riding with my hands on top of the brakes and the little notch that they have there for you to rest your thumb against. And I think tugging on the levers from that position, it's a little bit difficult to get full stopping. So I've gotten used to at some points going down into the other position, changing positions for a hard stop.
Nice. We can actually loosen them up a bit for you.
So. Oh, you can.
Thanks for mentioning that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man. All right.
It's good to be back.
Anyway,
that's right.
I was here talking microwaves last time.
That's right. So. Yeah. And the thing that we probably alluded to last time you were here, before we were famous, was that you do a lot of bicycle things, and we actually had you talk about the microwave thing because that was so revolutionary and so life changing. There was actually, I think, one of the fellows that wrote in sometime, probably pretty soon after we had the episode out. He was like, "Oh, I'm just catching up. I'm listening to episode 4. No microwaves." And he thought that apparently he thought that was interesting from what he wrote. So anyways, Mr. David Hetty, thank you.
It's really good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us once again. We should introduce. Yeah. In a atypical role reversal, Brandon, why don't we talk about what we're drinking tonight?
Sure, that'd be groovy. Let's see. I am drinking a from Ninkasi Brewing Company. Their Otis. It's an oatmeal stout, 1 pint and 6 fluid ounces at 7.2% alcohol
nice.
By volume.
7.2.
Yes,
my goodness. I've
had many of their other beverages, but I've never had this one, so I'm looking forward to it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But so Mr. Hetty, what are you drinking?
I am drinking New Belgium Brewery.
Oh yeah.
Out of Fort Collins, Colorado.
That's right.
The 1554 Enlightened Black Ale.
Yeah, and did you know that we actually have a growing and substantial contingent, I think, of listeners in Fort Collins?
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I should mention I met one of these New Belgium workers here in Portland, and maybe I shouldn't mention, I got like 10 cases of beer for doing some bike work for him.
That's so, right. I remember that. That was like a year ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just like, "Hey, I've got some beer. Let's swap."
It was a great deal.
Which I assume,
I'm grown to love this 1554.
Because it's really dark, right? It's like a...
Yeah. Yeah. But not too... It's dark, but it's not got that deep chocolatey flavor. It's,
right.
It's a little
it's
different.
A,
yeah.
Not a porter
not
or
a porter,
anything. Yeah. Well, we can assume that the man who traded you some beer for bicycle work was completely ethical and above board.
I'm sure he was.
And we're not even going to name him, so it's not like he can get in trouble.
No.
Yeah. So I, on the other hand, will be drinking chamomile tea tonight because I've been feeling a tad under the weather. And, I don't know what that's all about, but, yeah. But don't worry, folks out there. I did have a shot of Old Crow whiskey, bourbon, before the show started. So I
fear not. He
yeah,
won't.
Yeah, exactly. But I figured I shouldn't probably push myself any farther than that, just in case I come out with the gout or something tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, pop those bottles open, gentlemen, and we'll go. We do have some things that I found interesting on the internet some time back. we will talk a little bit about those. Brandon, would you like to read the headlines?
Oh, yeah.
It's up to
I
you.
I have a beverage to
you do.
Pour
you
here.
Do have to pour
would
that
you just,
out.
Yeah. There we go. Talk amongst yourselves.
Take your time.
Well, thank you. Okay.
yeah, we had
that's awesome.
A lot of rain here in Portland today. It's pretty wet.
Yeah, we did. That's what she said. So let's see. First thing we've got going on here is, there we go. Got to get my sounds back. The Green Garbage Project, making your own butter,
yeah,
without pesky waste packaging.
That's right. Yeah, which dairy products in general. I've been following the Green Garbage Project for some time. A friend of mine sent me an email about it a long time ago, and they've been working. Actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Amy from Green Garbage Project is going to be a guest in the next couple months, maybe sometime in May. But she just has this awesome article about making butter and doing it yourself as opposed to having to depend on a dairy or something like that. So.
Does it wind up being more cost efficient or,
I'm not sure. I don't think, she talks a little bit about cost effectivity on her website, but I think overall, her bottom line is not so much financial as it is environmental and trying to get away, because this is the family, the couple that went for a whole year and they kept all the trash they produced and they kept it in a little trash box. So
wow,
that was a fascinating project. They're still doing it. I think they moved, and they've been making some concessions because this world is a hard one to live in without producing waste of any kind. But they've come up with some really innovative solutions. So the most recent one of those was butter. So we've got a link up for that. Wow. You should check that out.
Great. Let's see. Next one we've got here is from Jonathan Maz at Bike Portland. Women cycling in Portland.
That's right. Yeah. It's just, he puts up photo galleries of different kinds of bicycle commuters from time to time. This one featured women. So,
like looking at girls on bikes.
That's right. It was International Women's Day. And I think that was the reason that,
okay.
It wasn't just
far less creepy than I made it out.
Yeah. Although I suppose, I mean, if I was to stand around and take pictures, I think he can get away with it because he's Jonathan Moss and
people don't bike by and go, "Oh my God, that's Jonathan Moss."
He's a fine, upstanding gentleman. You know? Everyone knows his motives are clear. He's got that gallery up, and
This next one was great.
From that one. Yeah, the gravity biking at freeway speeds. I believe, I don't know if the picture was in that gallery or if it was something else. Did you see that, Hedy?
I did. Monstrous.
Yeah, it was something else. It's a pedal-less bike, right? It's just a coaster bike. So yep. There's no propulsion, no drivetrain. You're just taking gravity that takes you downhill. But the lady that was doing this, I believe, was approaching 60 miles an hour or something like that, and just bombing down a hill. And I don't even remember where this happened. I think it was perhaps Mount Hood. Yeah, yeah, which I was up at the other day, actually. I rode in a car, to my shame, but what can you do? So anyways, it's a fascinating picture and a fascinating story that goes along with it. The time, I think it comes from a couple of years ago, but it doesn't make it any less interesting. So there's that.
Great. Also from Bike Portland, we've got, big ass cycle and trailer cargo galore. What's that mean?
It's just a car galore. I believe that's an antiquated term for lots of stuff.
Hi-oh. Okay.
but yeah, there's a fellow that I believe Mr. Moss caught up with who rode a bullet bike, and it has an EcoSpeed assist. And you said, Hedy, you know some stuff about this EcoSpeed.
Oh, a little bit. I think it's the guy over at Splendid Cycles on Belmont.
That sounds right.
20-something. But he, he sells bullet bikes. And this is his personal bike. And I think he had four bikes on the back of it.
Right. So that makes sense. If he's a bike shop owner, he's bringing some of his new spoils, his new product for sale into his place. But he had, four bikes on this trailer. It was just a huge load of stuff.
Right. And to help, going around the hills of Portland, he has this EcoSpeed Assist, which I think is a local company. Is that...
I'm not entirely sure.
I think it's
worth looking into. We'll have a link on the website for you there.
EcoSpeed. And basically it somehow either hooks into the rear hub. Somehow it's an electric assist that gets you over hills.
Yeah.
And the pedaling just isn't sufficient. Yeah. So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So anyways, the picture itself is worth it for looking at that, but also plenty of great information.
Good on them. Let's see. So next up we've got options for when you're antagonized on the road. This is an awesome graphic.
Yeah, and I've got that here. Maybe I should just read down the list sometimes. It's got the typical like bicycling sort of stick, not a stick figure, but the kind of bicycle you would see on a road sign. Very iconic. You could yell back, but how about creative retribution?
Oh, well, the context is like if you get buzzed by a car, right. They honk their horn or some sort of aggression.
Thank mm-hmm. you for contextualizing. I'm so excited. I just launched right in.
Woo!
I like the idea that you could give them the slow clap.
That's right. Just
or just wave. Anyways, the idea being that if people encounter resistance to frustration or anger other than, you know, reciprocal frustration or anger, you can make them think. And as they say, it sticks with them all day. So this is a fantastic little graphic. It's well worth checking out. So.
That's great. Oh, sorry. I lost my place here. Let's see. There we go. A Tucson family trades their car for a cargo bike. That's a big shift.
And in Tucson, nonetheless, downshift, I mean, it's nicely done. It's just a cool little story. It's another conversion tale of someone saying, "Hey, we should do this." And aside from the obvious disadvantages, there's also the idea that they were making, I think, lots of car payments. They couldn't afford both cars. They just kind of had them, and so they said, "Hey, what if we cleared out some space in our garage and we went for the cargo bike instead?" So, good story.
Yeah, I think they went with the they're going with the extra cycle, and they still have one car, I think. But
They haven't gone car free, but they've pared down significantly.
And the cool part is it was at the wife who'd been kind of anti for a while said, "Can we do it?" Like came back to the bikey husband and said, "Let's do it. Pull the trigger."
Nice,
if you will.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. So, anyways, good story.
Yeah, great stories.
So that's pretty much that's what we've got for the things on the internet. You can go check those out. We've got links up on our website at thesprocket.podbean.com. Without further ado, Mr. Hetty, we would like to inquire about your bikey lifestyle, and you want to start just by telling us how you got into the whole thing? Like, what was it that inspired you to love bikes in the first place?
I'd love to. Thanks, Brock. I can remember I grew up in Flint, Michigan. I can remember that, actually. not many things I can't remember. I can remember that first 10 years of life or so. Lived on a dirt road, and even before I could ride my bike, I would run. I've got two older brothers that would ride their bike, and I would run next to them pushing my bike.
Nice.
That's my earliest biking background memory. I also remember sitting in the back of church reading BMX magazines. That's nice. How I made it through the long sermons.
If there's one thing you're gonna do in church that you shouldn't be doing that I think is probably okay, it's probably reading a magazine about bicycling.
I think so.
What would Jesus be reading?
BMX, of course.
Because Jesus,
of course, biking was a part of my life for many years after that. But I, in high school, I bought my first mountain bike, a full suspension Specialized stump jumper. Paid way too much money for it. Well, it was used, but I think the guy ripped me off. I paid $300 for it, and I think it was worth maybe $150. But whatever the case, I started getting into mountain biking in college. I started road biking, and I bought a touring bike. And it seemed like the right bike to buy, but I went out on my first road ride with a bunch of racy bicyclists.
Oh, sure.
And I just couldn't
keep
up.
Racy as in they were showing a lot of thigh?
That and just they all had really skinny tires carbon and, aluminum.
Yeah, Craven.
Super
tight
fast.
Clothing.
Crap. Yes, Craven.
As Bike Snob likes to say.
As Bike Snob, yeah. But it actually was a pretty nice crowd. I remember the first time I went out with them. One of the guys lagged behind, and he put his hand on the back of my seat, bicycle seat.
Oh yeah,
and pushed me up to the group.
That's
and
an important.
He had to do that. He had to do that three or four times, but it was cool. It was a good first experience.
So he was kind of trying not to leave you behind.
Exactly.
Trying to keep you involved in the whole experience and keep you up to speed with the group.
Yes. Nice. Exactly. So. I moved out after college to live on this little organic farm in Waco, Texas. I went to Baylor University. I think you knew that. But lived on this farm. It was about 8 miles outside of town. And kind of the experiment of living on this farm was to use alternative transportation. So horses, bicycles worked better for us.
There we
the
go.
Horse thing was a joke, but we would ride our bikes into town and back out. So I'd easily a day drop 20 miles just commuting. So
that's pretty
quickly
cool.
Became a commuter, and I haven't turned back, but I do a lot of different type of cycling nowadays. I commute to work. I do cyclocross
You did
races.
Cyclocross, yeah. We have an awesome picture of you doing that. Actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think
nice.
So. Unless I have a picture that I think is of you, but we should verify that. Anyways.
DNA testing.
Yeah.
So I do some of the Cross Crusade series and trying to get back in shape for that. I've got quite a while till winter next
right,
year. And
right.
then, yeah, just do some longer road rides. But I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about doing some bike camping as
yeah.
opposed to bike touring, just bike camping being one, two nights out.
Right. So not crossing the country, not riding across
yeah.
a state.
Which doesn't really work for a family. I've got
sure, yeah.
me, my wife, and a two-year-old. So
yeah, another one on the way,
and
right?
a bun in the oven, yeah.
And yeah, early June we'll have our second. So
maybe a happy family of four.
Can't believe it, man.
That'd be exciting.
So yeah, that's kind of my background.
There you go.
Cycling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you should maybe start a little bit because I think a lot of people would assume, just like in the racing world, a lot of people assume that you have to have the special clothes and you have to have a really expensive
right.
bike in order to actually ride a bicycle. When you could get a $300 BMX and be perfectly happy. There's also the idea that if you're not going to go touring like across the country, if you're going to make it from coast to coast, it's not worth doing, which is not the case. And, you and I have done a few trips together, I think, pretty exciting,
we have.
But yeah, tell us a little bit about you got a special term that you got from Rivendell.
Yes.
Rivendell bikes down in California.
Rivendell down in, Walnut Creek, California.
Yeah.
I actually visited there last year and test rode one of their bikes up Mount Diablo. It was a really fun experience. But yeah, they use this term Grant Peterson. I think he's the owner of Rivendell. He uses this term. I think it's S240, but
S240.
I think that's what it is. But
yeah,
it basically
right.
means a sub. I think it's a sub 24-hour overnight or something. But
yeah.
I've kind of gotten into that and it's taken off. My wife and I did our first bike camping S24-0. It's harder to say that than just a 24-hour trip.
Right.
So we did our first one when we were living in Texas, and we just have been hooked ever since. So anytime I get a break, I work full-time during the week, so it's hard to get away for too long. But anytime we have an opportunity and the weather's right here, we try to get out. And that has... You know, in the last, we've got a two-year-old, I said, so he's gone on some of our trips recently, so
yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
What's that experience like? Is it, you have a trailer, right? You pull him
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we use a Burley trailer, which I've got mixed opinion on. They're great trailers.
Sure.
It just feels a little vulnerable with the kid being so low to the ground, but whatever the case.
Yeah, and that's a lot different when you're in a rural context, if you're going somewhere outside of a city.
Right.
Because if you have specialized facilities like a bike lane or something, it seems like that would make it seem a lot safer. You'd feel better about pulling
right.
your kid around behind you on a bike.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're out in the country, people are going high speeds and visibility is not always good. So you can see how that'd be tricky. Do you have any ideas about what would be better in that regard? Like, I mean...
You know, I'm kind of beginning to think something like an extra cycle is ideal because you can get the kid off of the ground.
And
so
kind of on the same vehicle as you.
Right, on the same vehicle. I don't think it's any safer. But
being close to the ground, what's bad about that?
The main thing is in like slow speeds on turns and whatnot, a car, it can be below the hood of the car.
Oh, gosh.
Sure.
So turns and stuff... The trailer can get clipped.
Okay.
That's the biggest concern. But really, we put two huge flags on it, so we look like dorks. But that's the way we like it, you know?
But better a dork than... I was going to try and come up with some fancy
saying. No, but you can't make a witty joke about something
no.
that bad.
Yeah, you really can't. That's a good thing you stopped me.
Yeah, so anyhow, I like the extra cycle idea, just getting the kid up off of the road right behind you. They make little seats that attach to the front.
Yeah.
Right in front of the rider.
Is it on the on the top tube, right? Like on the top between tube. You and the handlebars?
Yep.
Which seems like maybe the safest place for a young child to be.
Yeah, so they may get a little awkward on longer trips, but that would be good for around town. But for longer trips, I think the trailer is the way to go. And this trip we took, the first one we took with Ezra, that's my son's name, we went out to Vernonia.
He's a cute kid.
Cute guy. Yeah. We went out to Vernonia.
We're here in Portland, Oregon. Vernonia, Oregon is about, 70 miles from Portland? Something like that?
Maybe, yeah, something like that. We split up the trip. We took the MAX train from
That's our late rail option here in Portland.
Right next to our house. So we got on it, and believe it or not, we got kicked off when we got down to the Rose Quarter.
Oh, really? So you were on the train, and then was it a fare inspector or security?
It was a security guy.
Okay.
He got on and said, "You can't have a trailer. Get off."
Right.
And we said, "No."
Even if it's a stroller. So
ridiculous.
Did you stand up to him?
We did. We stood up, and he kind of won. He said, "You're getting off this train." And then I didn't want to make a big scene.
Sure.
So we got off, and he did get us back on.
I'm telling Jonathan Moss.
He did get us back on, but it took quite a while before we were able to get back on. But
okay.
We got back on, made a successful trip all the way out to Hillsboro,
where I grew up.
And from there, I think it's maybe only a 30-mile ride out to Vernonia.
Yeah.
But we were able to complete it.
And that's actually – we did a camping trip out there that I bicycled to later last summer. And, Brandon, you weren't able to join us on that one. But that was – they have an off-road path, which is mostly paved, at least up to
– Banks to Vernonia Trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a dangerous, I mean, it's not dangerous, but there's a segment that's very, very rough, loose gravel, like big cobblestones. And
pretty steep.
Pretty steep. So I guess you have to know what you're getting into.
Ezra loved it.
I would imagine.
He loves just being out there. We don't try to go fast, so we'll stop and, take pictures of the wheat in a barn that looks cool. And stop at grocery stores and coffee shops. And so Ezra just has a blast. And then, of course, when we're out camping with the fire and playing around in the woods, he just has a great time. So I want to get him out as much as possible into that environment.
He knows how to say hot. So fire is one of his things that he's really excited about when he sees it.
Fire is his thing.
He was paging through a book earlier, I remember, and like every time he saw a picture of a fireplace, he pointed at it and said, "Hot."
In fact, he skipped the whole rest of the book, simply going to the pages of fireplaces.
Just identifying where the fire was in the book.
I know something, and I'm going to assert that.
Don't we all do that, though, still? We kind of just gravitate towards what we know.
That's really what this podcast is all about. Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, let's interject a break real quick. I've got some fantastic music for all of you to hear. Oh, speaking of music, that's not who I'm going to play, but let me say, just for you in Fort Collins, if you tune to 88.9 FM KRFC at noon on the 14th, which I think is like 2 days from now, a band called the New York Rifles, who I've been following for some time, and actually I think we shared a stage at one point, which is how I heard about them, but they're a fun little rock and roll outfit, and they're going to be in Fort Collins. I think they actually had a show yesterday that I didn't get to tell you about in time, but should you hear this, within a couple days of publication, you can the New York Rifles are in Fort Collins. They'll be on that radio station at noon, and then they have a show that night as well. So that's New York Rifles. And then what we're going to play for you tonight is a song called Bulldogs by the Portland-based band Sunbeam. This is Bulldogs. They haven't released an album yet, but they're pretty great, and highly recommend. If you go to their website, you can actually download this track for free. So here is Bulldogs, and we will see you on the other side.
She was on the porch, yelling through the door, said you're just a boy, outnumbered in a war. She stared at the sun, let it kiss her eyes, said there's something more. Of your living room, look at your shaking knees. the river and get in.
Bulldogs by the Portland-based band Sunbeam. You find them on the internet at www.sunbeamband.com, and they're awesome. So
it's
we were,
song, yeah.
Yeah, we were just talking about this is a world that's cruel and not at all times easy to get along in financially, and people are turning to bicycles, right, for their deliverance from the
with the higher gas prices,
the hefty scepter of oil,
all the ambiguities of Libya and such.
Yeah,
it's tempting to go back to. A post-petrol way of, a non-petrolized way of getting around, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you were saying, Mr. Hetty, that there are many things you should know when you're looking for
there
a bicycle.
Are. And a few simple things can get you a long ways. As far as, I think a lot of people, go with me here, I think a lot of people don't end up not enjoying bike commuting because they're uncomfortable mm-hmm. on the bicycle.
Right.
So...
Like not just uncomfortable because they're starting out there, stretching new muscles and that
right.
sort of thing, but uncomfortable because they're poorly set up for what they're trying to do.
Yep. I actually took a little hiatus from running for a while. I run here and there. And I realized when I got back into it, my neck was hurting, my knees, and I was reminded that anytime you start a new activity, it's going to take a little while to break your body
sure.
in. So no matter what, when you start bike commuting and using your bicycle as transportation instead of your car, you're going to go through a few changes, and primarily your rear end is going to hurt a little bit. Could I say ass on here? Your ass.
Yeah, we are explicitly
hurt.
Tagged, sir.
Okay.
You can say whatever you want.
Your ass is.
We try not
hurt.
To be hateful, but we're not prudes, I suppose, when it comes to.
So
although we are trying to trend downward, I suppose, isn't that.
I mean,
in that regard.
Trying so fucking hard, man.
Brandon. So So these are a few tips for all of you that are interested in either replacing your old full suspension Huffy you got at Walmart, or you're just looking for a better bicycle.
Right.
For longer.
And if you got a Huffy at Walmart, good on you.
I was going to say, props for getting into it. That's definitely the case. Yeah.
Hey, I wasn't ripping on it.
No,
I just
we support people that are getting into bicycling. You know, it's just.
I agree.
All stages. It's cool.
Yeah. It could be an IKEA bike.
I got my first bike in my adult life from Target.
Yeah, yeah.
Target.
Yeah, the upper class.
Right.
I was just going to say it's the sort of thing if you work for a large furniture company and you're trying to upgrade from something that you have now.
Mm-hmm. You got to start somewhere.
Exactly.
Looking at what, number one, you need to get, if you're looking at I would recommend a road style bike. It's a little bit faster. It's got the larger wheels, the 700C wheels versus the mountain bike wheels. You don't have to, but
so when you say a road bike, yeah, give me some more to my eye. Help my eye recognize what you're talking about.
Yeah, basically a road bike. First thing is you're gonna have larger wheels on it.
Wheels.
Most of the time it has drop handlebars.
Okay,
but that's not the case all the time.
Like ram's horns, sort of thing.
Yes, upside. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is. I was going to say upside down ram's horns.
Yeah. Speaking
That's
of
not
which,
true, though.
Do you remember we went to that the bicycle event? It was like that big cargo bike race ride thing, and they had that bike that was covered in wool, and it had actual horns for handlebars.
That's awesome.
That was pretty great, yeah.
So make sure that you get as big of a bike as possible for you. Most salespeople in bike shops recommend, if you go in looking for a road bike, and this is just a general comment, this isn't everybody, of course, but you go in, they recommend bikes that are typically too small for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I think it has to do with the market has gone towards racing
You'll
style
grow into it.
Bikes.
I suppose that's it,
I guess the industry has gone towards racing bikes. It's what has been selling, Lance Armstrong era that we're in.
Right.
Race bikes, skinny tires, yellow bands.
I know about Lance Armstrong.
What happens with that is you get the handlebars too low, because when you jack the seat up to get the height right for your seat,
sure,
your handlebars then are way too low.
Yeah.
If you get the right size bike, you can get your seat and your handlebars level. And that's like the lowest you want to go for any, normal rider.
Because you got to adjust the seat so you're getting the full extension of your legs, so you're getting as much power as you can per rotation of your legs, right?
Exactly. So you want to get the seat up. If you're going to get the seat up, you have to make sure your handlebars are high enough. A good kind of rule of thumb is when you're looking at your seat post on a bicycle with a horizontal top tube, just the tube that's horizontal,
the
closest
one that goes
to
horizontal,
the top,
perpendicular to the rest of the frame.
Yes. So when you're looking at, if you have a horizontal top tube, you want to have about a fistful of seat post.
What if I have a tube top? Then what?
Then you, sir, are probably in need of other advice, I would say.
In need of other advice. Sorry, that joke fell flat. Keep going.
Remember that, a fistful of seat post. That'll take you a long ways.
You
want to be able to stand over the bike, throw your leg over it, stand over it. Make sure it's not too tight, but you're probably only going to have about an inch when you pull it up between the tires and the ground.
Sure.
So that is about the most basic of what you need to know as far as sizing.
Did we mention that you were a bike mechanic at one point?
Yeah, I spent about 5 years in college and then after college being a bicycle mechanic.
I mean, you still are, I suppose, once a bike mechanic, always a bike mechanic. But
I think so.
You're no longer a professional bike mechanic.
Except in beer.
I mean, that's not true, because you're very professional, but it's not what you do for work.
Right.
So. He's meta-professional.
So I keep a handful of bikes going as part of my little intentional community that I'm a part of. And then I also work on neighborhood bikes, and then I've got a few friends outside of town. Well, in another part of town, I work on their bikes. So I stay busy. And I was going to say one more thing that you want to look for on a good commuting bike is enough clearance in the brake area that you can have decent width tires and fenders.
Right.
So
because fenders, really important. Especially as we've been learning over the past couple of weeks here in Portland, is you get monsoon, that sort of thing. It's you want protection from all the water that's coming up off the road at you.
Exactly.
So yeah.
And it's good even in other parts of the country for surprise rain or riding through water that's in the road. It's just nice to. Doesn't slow you down. You don't have to worry about speed.
You never know when somebody is going to pull open a fire hydrant and they're all everybody will be playing in the water and you'll be cruising through on your road bike without fenders and just sorry for yourself and everybody.
Or New York City if somebody's urinating in the bike lane or
which
whatever.
Happens, right? I mean that happens. So
it happens. Yeah. So enough clearance and usually you can narrow it down to a cyclocross style bike. So it has brakes called cantilever brakes. You guys heard that term before, cantilever?
Yeah. Is that what you put on mine?
Yes, you have cantilever. Okay. You had linear pole mountain bike style.
They're the squeezy types.
The squeezy types.
That are up above and they...
No, those are called calipers.
Calipers.
And you can, like your bike has caliper brakes. Yeah. And you can find nowadays with commuting bikes becoming more popular... They have made calipers that are wider. They can actually fit fenders and decent tires. Oh, okay.
So they've evolved.
They've evolved.
Nice.
Things are changing with our economy and the gas going so high and people just, I don't know what's going on, but there's a lot of momentum and things are changing. But the minimum width tire I recommend is like a 32C because that gives you comfort. You don't have to pump them up to 100 PSI.
Yeah.
You can... Yeah, you don't feel every road bump, and
that's what I
really
use.
Really nice.
That was on that new bike that you just got.
35.
Those are big tires. Yeah, you just got a Salsa, right?
A Salsa Via.
Nice.
Yeah, I've ridden cantilever. Not my whole life. Ever since I've been commuting, I've been riding when I was born.
Your whole life that's worth talking about on a bicycle.
Came out of the womb.
So this is my first disc brake bike, and I will tell you, it's fantastic.
That's pretty exciting,
I'm not going to say it's I don't know, but it has been really good, and it's been pouring down rain here, as you know, so
and that's
you can
the,
stop.
Yeah, that's the big thing, right, is that disc brakes are not as affected by water and wetness as other kinds of brakes are.
Exactly.
I remember my old Schwinn with, like, steel rims and the old block-shaped brakes. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And we're just, like, cruising through intersections going, I'm sorry.
How often do you have to replace something in those things? Because I've been dreaming of getting them.
If you're using them in rain with road debris coming up on them, probably every 6 months.
So but about the same as...
You could in dry weather for a year or so, but yeah. Maybe a little bit longer than pads on a rim brake.
And the
brake.
Pads on those costs?
Oh, about the same cost as rim brake pads. 15
That's
bucks.
Not bad. Okay.
No. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really a manageable technology, cost of maintenance.
Yeah. The technology is trickling down, and it's... I was always intimidated by disc brakes, but since I set these up and have been working on them, it's not as bad as what I was thinking. So
that's good to know.
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing that maybe takes some of the pressure off,
as it were.
But you don't need them. I want to be clear. Rim brakes are fine for most applications.
Right. I thought you were saying you don't need brakes at all. Which...
Oh,
fixies all the way, man.
No, I've got one of those too, but not my daily commuter. So, yeah, that's my thing on the right bike. You can get them on Craigslist. You can find decent commuting cyclocross-ish style bikes for $300 to $400. That's a really nice one. So,
and you don't need to get the drop handles.
You don't have to have drop handlebars. They give you more positions.
To be a good bicyclist.
If you're doing touring, it is nice to have those hand positions. But if you're just doing general commuting, I'd say 5 to 10 miles one way, 20-mile round trip, flat handlebars fine. I would recommend a little sweep back towards you, something with because it gets your wrists from being straight locked to just in a more comfortable natural position.
Definitely.
So.
You gave me I think when I went on my first big tour down the West Coast, I think you gave me some of those
bar ends
where you put them on the, because I only had flat handlebars on my bike when I first had them, and
it was
fine for getting around town, but I noticed I think I did like a week tour And it was, yeah, it was just long enough to be on one position on the handlebars that I really needed a place to put my hands, you know, somewhere else so that I, they wouldn't cramp up. So you were saying like if the handlebars sweep back towards you, kind of like the old cruiser style, like that can help with some of that, some of that pain in your wrist.
Yeah. In not come back towards you where it's actually, where it, the ends of the bars are pointing towards you.
Uh-huh.
There are bars like that, that work, but I'm just saying something that sweeps back like 15, 20 degrees.
Sure.
So
just enough to picture that. To be ergonomic.
Exactly.
Like those weird keyboards that split down the middle. those things never worked.
I'm so glad those things are gone.
Oh, seriously.
Are they gone?
Well, I'm sure you can still get one.
God. You can.
They'll never really go away. But oh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, anyways. Well, yeah, that's so you were saying about $300 or $400. That's kind of like the average price that you might expect to pay for something.
I think that's probably for a good quality road touring commuting bike. Yeah, about $300 to $400. I wouldn't anything below that. I'd probably not recommend for more hard use.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe that's the thing. I think I remember hearing somebody talk about like your typical department store bike. You go into your local big box and you say, I'd like a bike, and you get one, and it's a steal of a deal. It's like $99 or something like that.
Right.
And you're like, wow, this is so much cheaper. But I guess the problem is that it's cheaper. Like the parts are going to wear out probably quicker than better made parts would be
on
a better bicycle.
The safety, you got to look at safety as well with that stuff. The way it's put together, it's just not built to last. It's built to... for somebody that rides their bike once a month or even less.
Right,
so,
and not long distances and not for anything utilitarian.
Yeah, and you got to put it into perspective too. If you're using it as an alternative to a car, you pay more than that in 6 months for auto insurance.
That's true,
these things last your whole life if you take care of them. So,
yeah, and if you're replacing your car with a bicycle, then you do have to kind of, you're going to be saving money, but you're still going to be spending money. I remember a friend of mine was saying, yeah, I want to get a bike, you know, and I think I had mentioned maybe like these are some of the accessories you might like to buy and put out some price numbers. And he was like, no, I was thinking like $15, but he grew up, he was a Mennonite. And so, yeah, good guy, just thrifty.
But, I know a few guys like that.
Yeah. Well,
so
yeah. Is there anything else you want to throw out there before we wrap the show?
Anything to throw out there? No, I think that's about it. Just keep plugging along. It takes a little while to get your ass broken in, but after it does,
you're trying so hard to get, earn our explicit tag there. I appreciate.
No,
that.
He's not trying that hard.
I'm just trying to be polite, but. But my point is there is a huge momentum going in the direction of using a bicycle as an alternative form of transportation.
That's right.
If you, I mean, just localize things, if you can begin to work a little closer to home, you know, even 10 miles is doable, jumping on your bike, getting to work within 10 miles. It's the way things are going. So I'd say let's all keep doing it and let's jump on quicker rather than later on.
Yeah.
And I guess I think that's where I think, you know, a voice of explaining the basics of it all is really needed, because I feel like I feel like there's this need to like learn the lesson from those advertisements. What were they years ago? I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. And there's this sense with bicycling, especially bike commuting, like I'm gonna do this as a lifestyle, where it's sort of like the PC guy in those commercials, and it's like, oh my God, I'm so intimidated. What happens when because the bike's going to break and I'm going to have to know how to fix it, and I don't know how to fix it, and how am I going to get through this traffic and that traffic? And, you know, the whole selling point of a Mac, there's a lot of other great things behind those products, sure, but is, golly, it's easy and it's not going to shit its pants.
Right. It comes out of the box and you're ready to play with it.
Bingo. And, or you have to sync it with iTunes first.
Sure.
And so,
and if you're syncing it with iTunes, you should go to iTunes and, subscribe to the Sprocket podcast
and put it on that iOS device.
That's right.
That said, but that's, you know, like I feel like that lesson needs to be, needs to be carried over into bicycling, because it's such a great lifestyle choice, but people need to feel like it's a Mac.
Like it has to be.
They can just jump on it and go.
has to be empowering. It's like the idea that you don't have to be a genius and you don't have to be
an intuitive,
a big bicycle guy to do it. I mean, you can turn into a big bicycle guy eventually if you want to.
Yeah. Like I had no idea how to do like bike camping or anything like that until I lived with you, Brock. And I was like, oh golly, this is not as insane as it feels. In fact, golly,
oh, shucks.
I can just, no, I can pack up all the right bags and, attachments and be on my way now. And I've done that now and it feels amazing, but yeah. I need some hand-holding, and even if the product ultimately can't deliver the sort of Mac versus PC thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're telling everybody out there to do, is go out and hold some hands. Go out and mentor somebody. Although, as they were saying on...
Hell yeah!
As they were saying on the Rivendell bike site, if you are someone who knows a lot about bicycling, do not try... That was the most awkward handhold I've ever seen between two gentlemen.
Cue Darius Hunter. Hold my...
you go to the Rivendell Bikes site. They got the whole thing about tips for being a happy cyclist. And one of them was, if you are a man and you're into cycling, don't try to mentor every female bicyclist you meet.
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. Well, no, and I mean, this is something for our listeners out there, is like, if you know of a good resource or what your own experience was of transitioning towards a more bicycle centered way of being. Like I personally would love to know if there are some resources out there or just the sort of steps you had to take for that. That'd be really worth sharing, I think, with
everybody. Sure. And a matter of fact, if you call us and leave a voicemail on our voicemail line, which is at 503-847-9774, we'll be able to share that with everybody. So we'd love to hear that. Well, with that, we should probably wrap the show. We'll get ourselves off to bed and to a nice, restful, healing sleep when we'll wake up tomorrow and feel like we can go to work. So anyways, send us your input. Like I said, the voicemail line is 503-847-9774. The email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on the internet at thesprocket.podbean.com. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane.
And thank you to David Hedy tonight.
Mr.
Thanks
Hedy,
for having me again, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Hope you get well quickly.
Yeah, well, we'll do our best. I guess there's the whole thing. All right. We'll see everybody next week. Thank you so much for listening.
Adios.
And goodbye.